We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello and welcome to episode 221 of the Washed Up Emo podcast. I am Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com. Today on the podcast, we welcome Rich Balling from The Sound of Animals Fighting, Hospital Gown, Pyramids, and RX Bandits. Rich and I reconnected recently as we last crossed paths during my days at Equal Vision during The Sound of Animals Fighting release Lover, The Lord Has Left Us back in 2006. Now, Sound of Animals Fighting has a new EP called Ape Shit out on Born Loser Records. Rich and I discuss his career, balancing music, collaboration, and his day job, some old shows he saw growing up in LA, plus his amazing knack as a teacher in real life to provide some insight and knowledge for those listening about your heart, your mind, and realities we face as creative people. And yes, we talk emo. It's a podcast about emo. Thank you to all the Patreon supporters. If you want to help support, $1 or more gets you access to the Discord, and you support making this podcast and this whole creative that I do possible. So check that out at patreon.com/washedupemo. Also, Double Elvis, our podcast network, doubleelvis.com. Check out all their amazing podcasts, including Disgraceland. So check them out, doubleelvis.com. This is episode 221 of the Washed Up Emo podcast with Rich Balling.
Man, I am as good as I can be, you know, I think.
Why do you say it's that?
It's been a long couple of years, man.
Oh, yeah, with the COVID and the internet and everything else?
Yeah, and I don't want to get caught up all in that, but just like, yeah, and you know, I don't know, sort of some midlife crisis stuff.
I hear that.
And some odd bouts of depression and especially anxiety, and now the roller coaster of emotions that comes with playing shows is always interesting. Like for quite a few years pre Sound of Animals, I was like living in ska shame.
Mm-hmm.
With like, I loved what I did with the RX Bandits, but I'm like, man, like I feel like an actor in a Disney show at that point in my life, where I'm like, I need to do something darker and crazier or more serious to shed the remnants of, you know, my previous gig. And so I sort of retreated for a good number of years into a world, and this started before Sound of Animals, but then after Sound of Animals started is when I really got neck deep into a world of like experimental black metal and noise music, and just really the more obscure and noisy, the better. I always liken audiophiles or music fans to like, you know, any other fanatic where you're just constantly chasing the next extreme. And so I just immersed myself into more experimental, darker music. I don't know if that was a reaction to my previous years playing ska and it was like too happy, or if it was just something I was getting older and into that stuff more. But regardless, that led to the band Pyramids, which I play in with Matt Embry, who's also in Sound of Animals and RX Bandits, as well as Matthew Kelly, who's in Sound of Animals. And we used first initials and middle names, and we put out like five releases on Hydra Head, RIP mm-hmm. to Hydra Head Records, and one on Profound Lore. And now we're actually working on a new record. So excited about that. But that's sort of like, if people are like, oh, did you completely fall off the map with creating music? Not really. Much like with Sound of Animals and using animal names and aliases and masks, Pyramids was, again, with aliases and a whole nother genre, and trying to move away from not resting on any sort of previous projects, you know, achievements or whatever, to start fresh. Mm-hmm. And so I've never gone anywhere. I've never disappeared. I've actually been more active than ever. I've just been choosing to try to compartmentalize projects. And then in this last year, and this is sort of how I initially got hooked up with Born Losers, I started a new, basically a solo project called Hospital Gown. And much like many of my other projects, I'm obsessed with collaboration. So there's a lot of collaborators on that record. Sam from Teen Suicide's on there. Cray Sean is on there. A lot of cool European and Finnish artists collaborated on that. So anyway, long story short, busier than ever, and went from ska shame to black metal to now strange hyper pop folk concoctions, all while maintaining the story arc of Sound of Animals sort of in the background.
That's amazing. That's a fantastic recap, and I will use that as in my college class that maybe I'll teach one day. I'll use how to surmise yourself since nice. The last time you saw someone. That was very good. It's great that you've, you know, been able to kind of continue music. Has that been your full-time thing, or has there been other things that you've been able to kind of dive into as well?
Yeah, I've been pretty much maintaining a career in education over like 2 decades plus.
Tell me about that.
Originally, it was like, I feel like I need a steady paycheck. I'm worried that, you know, the dream of being a rock star might fall apart, and what am I going to do? Right. So mm-hmm. I thought teaching was a pretty cool choice of, for me, in terms of, there's a creative component with creating how you're going to deliver a lesson, how you're going to bring in supplemental materials to sort of impact and inspire kids. There's a performative aspect where you're actually teaching and leading the classroom, and you're like setting up those activities and things. And so that you get like a performative fix, a creative fix. And then there's also the time to create art with, you know, extended holidays and summers off and all of those things. So it was a cool way for me to be able to continue making music while sort of building a career for myself. And from there, I went, you know, just sort of climbed the ranks of teacher to instructional coach to administrator. And now I'm a educational consultant.
I remember both my parents were teachers. And growing mm-hmm. up, I thought every adult had the summer off. Like,
that's
awesome. I was like, there's 3 months off. You go and do stuff. Your parents are home every day. And I remember like going to college. I mean, it was that far. And then someone was like, no, dude, my dad works all year. I'm like, oh, crazy. You know?
Like, oh, for sure. For sure. And I sort of cherish quite a few of the summers that I was able to spend with my two daughters. Just mm-hmm. like, I'd throw them in the stroller and we'd just walk around the mall for hours, like doing absolutely nothing. But now that I think back to that, it feels so like innocent and and fun, and I have fond memories of that. So
that's great. So what about, what was that? What, I mean, the way that you describe the education and teaching, very similar, and I see the correlations to performance and music. What about that climb? It was almost like you were going from DIY to indie to major. You know, that's, if that's a bad correlation or not, or analogy, but what was that climb sort of where you're at now, kind of as a consultant from doing teaching? Like, what was that like?
Well, very similar to music, and sort of like a life lesson I feel like I've internalized at this point is just the idea of how important networking is. And I think about, you know, opportunities that I've been given and the trust that comes with those opportunities that are given or offered to me. And that sort of comes from years of building rapport and whatnot. And I've used that in both music with collaborators that have absolutely no reason to trust me, but find themselves, you know, jumping in and giving it a try and being pleased with the end result. And then the same with the career climb. It's like, all right, you start one place, and much like with music, you're not satisfied. You get restless. So you want, like, you want to one up yourself and go to the next challenge. And you can't stay in any one genre or any one place or with just a, you know, anything static. You have to continually challenge yourself and grow and move forward. And so that's where the climb comes from. And the networking in both capacities seems to have been very helpful.
Are you doing the same sort of teaching as you climbed? Or did you get into different disciplines, or what was some of the...
Yeah. Oh, it's always been English focused. I have a bachelor's degree in English education, and I have a master's degree in educational administration. So I've always considered reading language arts as my, like, niche.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then did you do that early in life? Did you have that all done before we had met, or did you do that kind of after you had said, like, oh God, what am I going to do? I need a steady paycheck. I've got other stuff going on. What was that sort of, some of those decisions?
Yeah, kind of a mix of all of that. Like, first, I started at a community college, and I never thought that I would actually graduate college. And so when I was in Arx Bandits, I would sort of tour every other semester and then tell the guys, hey, you know, let's not tour this semester so I can keep going to school. And so I would go to school every other semester, tour every other semester.
Wow. It took eight years
to get my associate's degree because I was on this, like, extended tour schedule. And then I sort of put that to rest and didn't do anything in terms of transfer to a four-year college until I had done a little bit more touring. And that's when I started to feel like, oh man, if this doesn't work out, am I going to be like 50 going back to college? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but will I feel like there's a waste of time? I felt like there was like a gun to my head. Like I had to make a choice between responsible life and rock stardom or whatever.
Yeah.
And the rock dream or whatever. And so, to be honest, you know, now that I've been through all that, part of me is like, well, why didn't I roll the dice and do what everybody says? You got to live your dream and take a risk and all of that.
You did.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the thing I have to learn to be pleased or content or satisfied with, you know, the great things that I've been able to participate in, because the truth is that, you know, at one point I dreamt about even just playing a decent show, you know, and now I've played hundreds of those or whatever. And so it's just like, I don't know, it's more of that restlessness. I really, really wish that I could control that a little bit better about myself. I wish that I could feel less restless, be okay with what I've accomplished, and just like enjoy roaming the earth, you know? but
we are very similar. I think, you know, there's that, I feel that sort of like there's a timer above my head. This is supposed to happen at this moment. This is needs to happen here. But I think I feel the word that keeps coming to me is you've been able to find a balance. You've been able to, like, even you did that innately with RX Bandits. Hey guys, I can't do this. I got to go back to school. I need to do that. Like back then, like, you know, to be able to have that. So I think that's amazing. And I think you're still doing it. You're able to, we're talking because, well, we've known each other, but also you've got a music thing going on and you still got your job. So I feel like you've done an amazing job to balance that and be able to continue to fill up yourself with that music love and then, you know, sort of be able to balance the other, you know, day-to-day shit that we have to do while we walk this earth.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate you observing that. And I do think that I don't give myself enough credit with that sort of thing. I do think that it is sort of a blessing, the balance that I've, you know, figured out. But yeah, it's just there's always that tendency to want to do more, you know.
Is it because you're seeing what other people are doing or just yourself inside? And your maybe ideas, because that's me sometimes. I'm like, I have 1,000 things that and it's like, which one do I pick?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both, man. I definitely suffer from FOMO. Actually, one of the things that I told myself I will seriously consider is after these two weekends that are coming up with these shows that I will look into just getting rid of my iPhone and buying one of those dumb phones, like the Lite phone.
Yep.
That just doesn't have an app store and doesn't have games and doesn't have social media. And I just don't know if that would be doing myself a disservice or if it's actually going to help me live a healthy life. I don't know.
Well, I don't think I agree with you.
And I only bring that up because as we crossed over into that, what other people are doing, I think that largely is responsible for feeding my personal beast.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. I mean? It's hard because there's this like constant, you know, I think if I didn't have Washed Up Emo, I think I would be on it less and less and less. But I feel like I need to know when, oh, that thing got announced or that band is doing this. I got a post about it. And then I slowly leaned back and was like, not Fat Joe leaned back, but just leaned back and said, okay, well, I'm going to post what I want. I'm going to talk about what I want. I'm not a news site. And I feel like almost personally, we feel that, like, you know, people.
It's definitely, I
was speaking to someone in college, the episode that just came out this past week with Melody Caudill, who's Jeff Caudill from Game Face's daughter. And it was amazing to talk to her about social media.
I gotta check that out, dude. That's amazing.
But she's like a freshman in college, so I was like, tell me, what's going on with kids right now? How the fuck are you dealing with this? And she's got a really great answer, so everyone should go listen to that. But I just think that's it's a valid thing for you to be aware of. Like you seem to be very present of like this feels this way. And it's not bad or good or better or worse, but it's more of that focus. And like you said, the word restlessness of you are a creator. You're creating in the classroom. You're creating in art. You're creating with friendships. You're building those things. You're constantly kind of like building on self. And I think it's almost like I was on a plane and it didn't have Wi-Fi for 6 hours. And I usually am on planes that all have it. And I just was like, this kind of rules. Like, let me get in it. And I really enjoyed it. So I feel like you're probably balancing that of, you know, your brain would probably be thank you as you're either working on a class, you know, syllabus or a musical endeavor, right?
Yeah, I would think so, man. That's what I'm hoping. And so I'm going to try to make myself less dependent on being plugged in all the time. My greatest fear, I think, is like being restless and then one day I die and I spent the time like internally grappling instead of just being happy for what I have. Recently, I took up yoga, which has been tremendous for me. That's part of the midlife crisis. And then I also have never gotten any tattoos until recently. I have like 10 planned already. Well, I started a midsummer theme on one of my arms,
okay,
like from Midsummer the movie. And I have an appointment in May to get like a Powerpuff Girls sleeve essentially on the other arm.
Yes. So.
Now, I wouldn't call it a crisis. I've been saying mid crisis awakening. So if you'd like to adopt that, please use that moving forward, okay?
Yeah, I might do that.
It's a little softer.
The spin on that. It is softer. It's more hopeful.
It's more hopeful. If you would talk to someone and a kid came up to you at a show and said, I love this music, but I have this job. What do I do?
Yeah. No, that is a good question. I mean, the honest answer, even though I've been sitting here saying, oh man, sometimes I wish I would have just abandoned everything except for following the dream. But like, the truth is my answer to that, and it has been a real life discussion I've had with many people, is like, you know, college isn't for everybody, but you should definitely have a plan of some kind. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't want to say don't go all in, man, you know, but the whole thing of you could be whatever you want to be, sometimes I wonder just how true that is, you know? So if we're going to be realistic, we wouldn't say that we could be whatever we want to be. We could say, hey, try really hard to achieve your dreams and your goals, but have some sort of plan underneath it. And that makes me feel like a dad talking, but I am one. So, but you know, like if you're gonna tour, take some online classes. I don't care if it's like one. I don't care if it's like one class a year. As long as you have like something else going on so that, you know, if one plan drops out, the other one is there and you don't feel like, oh, I just devoted 30 years to something that fell apart. Now I got to start from scratch. I don't know. So maybe I'm projecting my personal fears onto other people with this advice, but I do think that there is a flaw in the whole, you can be whatever you want to be. I think people do need to consider what might happen if what they want to do doesn't pan out. What will they do? You know? And I think that having something concrete going on the side is not a bad idea.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Yeah, no, you know? I think that's, I mean, I was just talking to Scott from Texas The Reason, you know, he was always into cooking, right? And
nice.
He was telling me a story, and we were at his restaurant, and he was just like, he kind of fell into it. He didn't realize it as it was happening, but he kind of tapped into his loves. And that's what I kind of tell people. I'm like, what else do you like? Do you like you said, teaching? Like, cool, let me dip into that. So no, I think as a dad talking, I think that was great. But even if you weren't, I think that's solid advice for someone to really ask themselves those questions. What else?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, it's the same thing with like when there's a basketball player, you know, trying to be in the NBA, there's only what, less than 500 NBA players. Like there are other things you might need to, you might play in France. You might play somewhere else, or, you know, so it's those.
Or work on getting a broadcasting job. If you're a photographer and your dream is to just do nothing but like band photos, but you're not getting much work, don't just give up. Like take wedding gigs and do that. Like the point is like, you know, it's not always the fun, romantic, you know, picture of like the perfect dream scenario, but man, you got to be willing to put some skins on the wall, you know?
Yep. And practice. And it takes time.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was really fun when Michael reached out from the label, because I just think the time period that I want to talk about is back a little bit, even though it never left.
For sure.
Which you could,
for sure,
I could do a whole podcast about, but we'll skip that for everybody. But
yeah,
emo never left. But I just let's go back to, you know, you and I, EVR, those years, and you know, what are some memories that you have now before we talk about what's kind of happening at the moment. But when you look back, you know, at that moment, you know, if we call it the MySpace or call it that era, what first comes to mind?
Man, well, when you say MySpace, it just triggers, like, you know, memories, fond memories of when all of the social platforms were still new, or, you know, Snapchat wasn't even a thing yet, you know. When MySpace was around, everybody was so accessible because it was so new. And a lot of my early collaborations came from me being able to DM on MySpace and almost anybody would respond.
Totally.
Like, it didn't matter how famous you were, because it was so new that there just wasn't a thing where, like, you get 1,000 DMs in your Twitter inbox a day and you just start ignoring them or whatever. Or you don't run your own accounts, because everybody was just so fascinated and so hands-on and personal with it. So I loved that era, you know. I loved just the free spirit, nature of the shows and the people and the music. And I don't know, you know, maybe because I associate it so closely with my own youth and innocence that I look at it in a very nostalgic but fond way. Like you said, it hasn't left, but it's like, man, I'll still get chills if I go to shows. Like a couple weeks ago, I saw Sunny Day play in Dallas. Dude, I mean, total pros. The set was just perfect. Or I'll see the starting line come through and I'll, like, stand in the back of the club and cry, because it just makes me want to be back in that time so badly, you know?
Right.
I like how it's almost like all of the things that I feel like are currently to blame for destroying humanity were still innocent and fun during the time you're speaking of. And so it's like, I just look at it differently.
Yeah. You know? We knew it was good, right? You and I were like, we're at the Warped Tour. We, you know, Circa was taken off. Like, there's all these things going on, and we knew, but the respect from the general, other than Fuse and a few things on MTV or a few outlets, right? There wasn't a reverence to it like indie rock. And now it's sort of funny to see sold out arenas, sold out fucking stadiums for these records that at the time was shit on.
For sure. Yeah, you know, I think that there's just, like, connotations of youth and less being less serious, right? It's kind of what happened to ska. It's like with indie, it's like all older, more refined intellectuals like The National or Pavement that are being clever with words and playing their instruments in a serious way. And then, not that there's anything comical about emo, but it was very much like sort of punk rock kids that weren't always, you know, top tier jazz musicians or something, like putting some dissonant noise together, not worried as much about pitch with the vocals. And so to the sort of common passerby that hears it, they might just think it's kids messing around, or, you know, and only this time they sound sad or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just making assumptions. But I also think that now we're at an age where, like, our kids and whatnot are looking at these bands sort of like how my parents might have seen Led Zeppelin or something. Like, it's like the musicianship comparison is odd, I know, but it's like, you know, it's that same nostalgia. It's like when I was growing up, everybody wore shirts, you know, Pink Floyd shirts. And now when kids are growing up, everybody are wearing My Chemical Romance shirts. I think that each generation is just captivated by the decade or two prior.
For a band like you guys that crossed a lot of those eras, it's almost like you being a teacher, like you're kind of educating. Like, do you feel that? Like, I feel like the...
That's interesting.
I feel that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I do. Now that you say that, I do. I instantly understand what you mean. I don't know if that's top of mind when we engage with fans or walk into a venue to play or whatever, but I do see what you mean. Sort of along the same lines, like, you know, I've been to some of the emo nights. I even DJed at one time a couple of years back. And what I found was interesting is like the playlists at these emo nights are, you know, Sum 41, Good Charlotte, Paramore. So it's really interesting to see the perception from different age groups of what emo even is.
Right.
So there's a lot of kids that are, you know, filling the of course there's like the adults that want to go see My Chem and relive that. But then there's also like a whole nother generation that's discovering My Chemical Romance, for instance. And they're just like, oh my gosh, this band's so great. Those kids' perception of emo is like Paramore, Newfound Glory, Good Charlotte, Sum 41. And I would say that that's more like pop punk, right? Like, I understand why there's the emo adjacent category happening, but like, I always leaned into the, okay, emo was Get Up Kids, or, you know, like,
right.
Or, you know, if I wanted to feel like I was being like a purist, Rites of Spring or something, you know, like, but, or Dashboard's first album, or, you know, like, I don't know. But it's just interesting to see how emo has evolved in terms of like, it's like a multifaceted word utilized to just describe anything that is, involves emotions quite literally, or I don't know, you know what I'm saying?
Like, oh yeah, no, there's a whole podcast about this that you're on. I'm joking. no, you're perfect. Yeah, this is actually
that's a great point, but yeah, like,
yes, it is. It was more making fun of myself because I was like, this is all we talk about, but it is a very interesting. Yeah. I think you bring up a really good point that there's these generations that pick up on certain bands, and
yeah.
Like you said, My Chem went away. I knew they were going to come back. There's too much money on the table. And when, you know, and then that band passed through. And I think there's a correlation to punk, right? For punk people, it might be Ramones. For punk people, it might be, Green Day, or it might be something else. But I found that punk sort of has this like pass through that, like, you know, that it just has like, or No Effects, like it has this sort of like a little bit more nebulous. And I think emo just sort of became a punchline versus a music genre. Like it was a way to crack a joke.
A lot of it is time and place too. I mean, you look at a band like Turnstile, right? So like, they're obviously, you know, going to fall more into hardcore or whatever, but you know, you've got like the Pink cover on Glow On, and like sort of the emo sensibilities are sort of adjacent to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like that band is on paper not a top 40 band, yet their popularity right now is like they might as well be a top 40 band. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because sort of the question you raised earlier, similarly, it's like, well, when, you know, Snapcase and Undertow and all these other hardcore bands were were pioneering that scene, you know, 30 years ago, it didn't leave the 500 capacity club. What is it about now that has made it like everybody's ready for it now or something? Like, I don't.
Why? Tell me. Because I have no fucking idea. Because I heard it. I love Turnstile. Yeah. I worked at Warner when it was breaking. I was in the room. I saw these shows and it was amazing. I just was like, it sounds like Snapcase. So did did everybody miss Snapcase?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, they're a great band, and of course the Snapcase thing is it's a loose comparison, but there's a lot there that it's a strong point to make, is just like, why are people ready for it one day but not another? And I think maybe as I'm talking about this out loud, what it comes down to is like, you know, when the Snapcases of the world first break, like, I don't think that the originators, not that Snapcase is the originator of hardcore by any means, but like, I don't think the originators of a sound or someone that's doing something new or a pioneer is ever really the one to get big off of it.
Absolutely. You know? I heard Get Up Kids. I thought the same thing. I'm like, this is going to be cool. They're going to be great, but someone's going to copy this and make it more poppy.
100%. As we're processing this, I think that's what would have happened, is that over time, people have evolved to just be ready for Turnstile.
I love
you
it.
You know? So
what about the new Sound of Animals Fighting? Why now? What transpired with this EP? You might have said this before, but I think it's worth, maybe some people listening don't know the band, or, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, and this is the first new music in 15 years.
For sure. The biggest thing is just, you know, we don't tour very often. I don't know if and when we'll ever tour again. And it's like usually about every 4 or 5 years. And so we wanted to tour. I don't think it was like the pandemic itch where we're like, oh, we want to go out too. It was just like, hey, it feels like it's time. But this would have been like the third tour with no music. We'd still be touring on what would have been our last full length on Epitaph, The Ocean and the Sun, which came out in 2008. So it's like, we got to do something. And so it started out as an idea for a 7-inch. And then our schedules got so complicated that we couldn't finish 2 songs as quickly as we thought. And so while we were waiting for vocal tracks to be finished on those 2 songs, we made 2 more and created an EP out of it. But the impetus was largely because, like, hey, like, we still want this band to be viable. We want to go play some shows, but we need to be able to have something new to show for it. And so Ape Shit was born.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what was it like? I mean, the writing, was it like just like back when, you know, it was the same? Is it like the same feeling?
Yeah, pretty much. And what's interesting is like this, the writing process and the recording process for this EP is really identical to the original EP, in that we truly started with drums, sent the drums to the guitars put over their part over the drums, and so on and so forth, all the way to the vocals. So there was no time where we were like writing songs together. We were just like bound in true collaboration by having to layer over what we were given. And the couple of albums in between this and our first EP weren't as much like that. We kind of did some of that, but there was a lot of like production and song evolution and things like that. But this one was very like, you know, impulsive, very just like, let's jump in and see what we can create and just set deadlines for ourselves and put a little healthy pressure on ourselves. And it worked out, I think, because I really feel like it sort of embodies the scope of the band's work in terms of like style.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're feeling good about it? Like, did it spark anything else? Like, you love collaborations. Did it spark anything else while that was happening post with all this coming out?
Yeah, I think that we're all pretty proud of it to the same degree. And so I think one big thing that's come out of it, and we haven't really discussed or put any plan in motion per se, but I think all of us sort of have an understanding that we'd love to try to do some more stuff, because we do think that, you know, there's a time where bands outstay their welcome, but I think this EP showed us that we have some cool ideas still to explore. And so we're probably going to do some sort of companion EP to Ape Shit that would be, I don't know. We've discussed maybe doing like something more on the mellow end, that's like sort of like the anti Ape Shit, but like a companion. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to see the guys this weekend, so I'm sure it'll come up, but yeah, there's that. And just, you know, it's another really cool thing that came out of it is that my kids are old enough now to like have seen us perform on this last tour and see what their dad used to do. And it's probably more important to me than it was to them, but I really wanted them to see like, hey, your dad, you know, can be cool too. As pathetic as that sounds.
I think that's fine. It's been a fucking minute.
And I appreciate you taking time for this. I know that you're incredibly busy. I feel like, you know, what you're doing has become, you know, pretty darn successful. And I love the angle you have with it and the interesting guests you have on. Now, that is crazy. The thing about, was it Jeff from Game Face?
His daughter, Melody.
His daughter. Yeah, that is amazing. That, what a cool concept. Like, geez, I'm trying to think. There was an album by Game Face that was just huge for me. Was it called Three to Get Ready?
Three to Get Ready, 95.
Dude, Three to Get Ready, 1995. I graduated high school in 95. I had that album on tape. And I remember in Southern California, there was also a hardcore band called Straight Faced. And I would always
Straight Faced. They had one song. They had one song. That was it.
Yeah, dude. And so anyway, Game Face. Yeah, Game Face was cool because they were always like a little bit more musical than some of their peers, I thought. And I don't know.
Absolutely.
Cool, I saw Game Face open for Texas Is the Reason and The Promise Ring at the Troubadour in LA.
And that's where you grew up, right? In SoCal?
For sure. Yeah, I was in Southern California, and I saw, I think, a couple shows on that Texas Promise Ring tour. But man, I loved Texas Is the Reason. My gosh.
Now, were you Orange County or were you proper LA?
I was technically LA County, but right on the border. I could walk across the street and be in Orange County. I was born in Anaheim, which is in Orange County. I lived over by Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh, wow. That is really fucking close. Yeah, you literally could just walk back and forth.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
For sure.
And that, I mean, for you going to shows and, you know, obviously it was like it was everything.
Everything, dude. I reminisce all the time about some of the shows. That there was a place in Corona, California, the Showcase Theater, and they just had, I mean, one show I went to there was like Strife, Earth Crisis, Snapcase, like every big hardcore band in the world at that time was playing like on the same bill.
Was that the fucking California Takeover tour? Sounds like
I don't
it.
Know. Maybe. I don't remember if it had a title or not. I just remember like I loved opening the magazines, because when there used to be like the free magazines at the record store, one of them was called Mean Street. I would always pick that up and open it up, and there'd be a big old ad for the shows coming up at Showcase Theater. So I don't know. I like getting nostalgic about all the shows that I've seen.
Maybe we do another where it's just nostalgia. Yeah. Maybe you rack your brain, go look at the zines and some flyers, and then we could do like a SoCal nostalgia trip with Rich Balling.
For sure. Okay. I tried to keep a bunch of my ticket stubs, but they've started to fade over the years.
I have them in a book, like a straight up like a three ring binder. And I put them on pieces of paper, and it's like all my Mets tickets. Like, obviously it's so like, I was funny with Sunny Day. I got to get a physical ticket, and I just was so happy because I hate I hate the digital. You know, it's like, what am I going to do? Screenshot it, print it out. Like, it's gone.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. Pedro the Lion's coming, I think, this weekend. They're doing like two albums in full. And I haven't decided if I'm going to go to that or not. I think it'd be cool. And also on the nostalgia tip, never in my life did I think I'd see the Postal Service. So I'm excited about that. Oh, and I have tickets for, it's like in two, or no, it's in May, Curse's Domestika.
Hell yeah.
Because Domestika is, that's my album. Like, everybody comes at me with the ugly organ. No way, dude.
Nah, bro.
Domestika. And maybe it's because Domestika is like my entry point, and sometimes we tend to favor our first experiences, you know? But I just think it's a superior album, dude.
Well, Rich, thanks for doing this.
For sure, anytime. I appreciate the opportunity, man. It's good to catch up. Thanks for everything.